Some of the people who were here yesterday when I was talking about Buddhism seemed to have a pretty good appetite for continuing that topic in order to clear up lots of things that were left hanging. But others advised that probably it would be best to move along on the regular schedule. So I decided to go ahead with what had been scheduled. I'm not unsympathetic to those who would like to have followed up perhaps with something like Zen Buddhism or Zen and Pure Land Buddhism. If you have an interest in doing that, why don't you see me about it? Let's see what we can do. It's very possible for those who are going to be here next week yet that I could pick up that topic then, but see me about it if you're interested, and let's see once what can be done. So today I'm going to go on with an entirely different kind of topic. The Yaqui Indians of Arizona. I was in Tempe, Arizona for 5 months. That's in the valley with Phoenix there. From January through May this year. And while I was there, I discovered that there is a village of Indians right south of Phoenix. You can't even tell when you move from Phoenix on into Guadalupe. And there the Yaqui Indians live. Their village also has a lot of Mexicans in it and some other Indians of Mexican origin. And I had heard about the Yaquis and their Easter ceremonies, and that they were really rather special. And so I began to read a little bit about this and got more and more interested, and I got into a seminar at the Arizona State University on Indian religions. And a Yaqui woman was in that seminar with us, and so we had some special opportunities to learn about the Yaqui Easter ceremonies before Holy Week began. So I want to tell you a little bit about that experience, because I went out there during Holy Week and observed and participated with these Yaqui Indians in their way of doing Easter. The Yaquis originate in Mexico, came up into Arizona around 1886, and settled in the Tucson area, so that today there are about three clusters of Yaqui Indians in the Tucson area. And then there is this one cluster of Yaquis, or village of Yaquis, in the the Phoenix area, in Guadalupe, just south of Phoenix. And when they came up from Mexico, they came because they wanted independence, political independence. They wanted the Spanish to get off their backs about land. And they fought with the Spaniards, they fought with the government there, and they lost. And the survivors, many of the survivors, I should say, came up into Arizona in 1886. In 1909, they revived their ancient ceremonies, having been afraid for those years from 1886 until 1909, afraid to start doing their own ceremonies for fear of some kind of oppression. They'd had enough of that. But they began them, reviving them in 1909, and have been doing them ever since. Now, behind that story of the Yaquis coming into Arizona is the story of what happened in Mexico when the Jesuits came to the Yaquis as missionaries. And the Yaquis welcomed the Jesuits and fought off the Spanish military and political power. That happened in 1623, that the Spanish and the Jesuit missionaries came to the Yaquis. Actually, the Yaqui people down there responded very positively to these missionaries, to these Jesuit missionaries, welcoming them in, and within 7 years, 30,000 Yaquis were baptized. It doesn't usually work that fast, but it did there. 30,000 of them were baptized. They saw the Jesuits as coming to them with a constructive program of some kind, whereas they saw the Spanish military forces coming in with something that was very destructive to them. Now, the way they had been living down there in Mexico, their housing pattern was in what anthropologists call rancherias. That is, a little cluster of homes over here, and then two hills over, another little cluster of three, four, five homes, usually extended family situations, related families, and scattered then through the countryside these little groups. That is, they didn't come together and live in larger villages. They didn't create big towns. They lived that way in small rancherias throughout Yaqui country along the Yaqui River. And they were hunting people primarily before the coming of the Spaniards. Now, when the Jesuits came and they welcomed them in, the Jesuits apparently had some powerful influence over them, because within a very short time, this whole living pattern was rearranged along the Yaqui River in eight towns. Eight towns. And the Yaquis were all gathered in these towns. At the center of each town was the church. And that was the center of life and activity, the mission church. Around each town was farming. And this was managed by the Jesuit priests. And the Yaquis were taught how to farm. And they farmed for the village. And under the supervision and responsible to these Jesuit priests. So these hunting people are made into farmers. These people of rancherias are made into townspeople. And it changed their way of life completely. Meanwhile, we also know that these Jesuits taught the Yaquis some dramatic presentations, among which were the Passion drama, the drama of the Passion of Christ. And that's relevant to what we're going to be seeing today. Now, the world of the Yaquis, the way they mentally understand the world now, after the coming of the Jesuits, as being a world of two realms. There is a forest realm, and there is the church town realm. Those are the two realms. The forest realm is the realm of their former experience. And in that realm, they recognized that there were spiritual forces all around them. Spiritual forces that met them in the animal life and in the plant life of the forest. Spirits which would confront them as they went about their daily life. And when they were confronted with such a spiritual presence, they oftentimes had linkings to that spiritual presence and responsibilities to that spiritual presence from then on, almost as though they had been forced into a kind of vow and a linkage with that spiritual force. They had that kind of experience. The powers of that forest world were unpredictable and uncontrollable. They were spontaneous and, what should I say? I guess maybe uncontrollable is the most important thing. But they were powers. They would come to people in visions oftentimes, and dreams too. They would come in the form of animals. They would come in the form of plants or plant persons. Plant persons, personalized understanding of the plant life. The ancestors of the Yaqui were believed to permeate that forest world. Their spirits were somehow still out there in that forest world, and those spirits would confront them as well. Then there was the church world that they had now been introduced to by the Jesuits. That world was the village world or the town world, organized, structured. It was a world of organized work, and there were two kinds of work to be done. There was the work of farming, and there was the work of ceremony, liturgy, liturgical work, the work of the people of God. And ceremonial work was regarded as work, as much as farming was. The sacred forces and the powers that permeated that church world and that town world were, of course, God, Jesus, the mother of God. Jesus, mother of Jesus, the Blessed Virgin, and the saints that they were introduced to. And they had images of these, no images of their former deities, but they had images of these that had helped to bring them into focus. It was a world in which this power or this grace that was available came to them through the ceremonial work of the people. Through the liturgy that they did, that grace was channeled and that power was channeled into their lives. It was, as the other world was, full of healing powers, the possibility of healing, and they welcomed the idea of a heaven hereafter. Paradise was a good thought. So you have those two worlds, and in a sense, this is the world of their former experience, this is the world of their new experience, but this former experience does not get forgotten, and that's the big point here for the experience of the Yaquis. These two worlds, in their hearts and in their minds and in their lifestyle, these two worlds live in a kind of complementary relationship, sometimes appearing to be in tension with each other, other times seeming to come out to the same harmonious conclusion together. But their way of celebrating their Christian Easter ceremony has to join these two worlds somehow of their experience. That's why I call it Arizona Indians doing it their way. The big ceremony that I want to talk about begins with Ash Wednesday and runs through Easter. Now, it's not unfamiliar to us that there is such a stretched out ceremony, but it probably is unfamiliar to spend as much time at it as they do. On Ash Wednesday, they begin with the service of ashes, the typical Roman Catholic liturgical service of applying the ashes, confession, and so forth. But as they come out of the church, there is an organized army standing there around it. I want to tell you about that army just a little bit later. But first, I want to give you a quick overview of what they do through this through Lent. What we're going to see then after Ash Wednesday is that through the Fridays of Lent, there is a buildup of the powers of evil. Evil builds up against Christ, searching for him, seeking to destroy him. And sometimes that evil seems to represent some of these forces from the forest world. In a minute I'll tell you more about those powers of evil. Finally, those powers of evil seem to have almost total control on Good Friday, when they crucify Jesus and have that whole thing in their possession. Then comes the rumor of a resurrection. And then comes Holy Saturday with a great gloria, the resurrection and the glory celebration. And Easter has begun. In my experience, it was about 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon, I guess, there, when it broke loose. And from there until noon the next day, it was all celebration. Powers of evil were overcome through the resurrection of Christ. But how they express that is what I want to get at. The way they view this whole thing is interesting. They view it as a work that has to be done for the welfare of the community. I really believe that this is the Yankees' renewal ceremony, annual renewal ceremony. This is the new year. This is the recreation and the revalidation of the Yaqui community. So the ceremonial work, sponsored by and done by the community, in a certain sense, blesses the community for another year. So it's a very important work to be done, and people consider it an honor, as much as hard work, to be a part of doing it. The liturgy is done also as a fulfillment of individual vows for the main participants in it, are people who, for one reason or another, have made vows to Christ, or some sources say to the Blessed Virgin that some of them have made vows, in exchange for tremendous blessings that have been received in the past, or maybe a baby that was sick and about to die, and mother took it and made a vow that if this child shall live, I will dedicate this child to serve as a participant in the ceremonies for 3 years, 5 years, or something like that. So in fulfillment of vows, that seems to be an important thing. Now, to go at the details of it a little bit, because it was such a powerful experience for me, and to some extent for my family who participated in parts of it too. The physical setting is that we have here the church, and the church is a little Spanish-style white church. Double doors that, when they're both open, make it pretty wide so that you can get a procession through there. You walk inside, and there's nothing but, on the far wall, a long shelf. I guess we could call it an altar. And it's just cluttered with images and symbols of all kinds and pictures of Jesus, Mary, and saints, and so forth. And then there's paraphernalia, kind of junky type paraphernalia, but it's stuff that when it's pulled out and used in a procession, it has lots of meaning. It's a powerful thing. Everything else is just dirt, like everything in Arizona, just sandy dirt. Nothing growing in it, it's just, and no cement, no wood, it's a floor of dirt, which of course is very congenial for dancing. You want to do a little dancing, you don't want to do that on cement or even wood, and you certainly don't want pews all over the place cluttering the thing up. So that's all there is to the church. Around the church, in front of the church, there is what is called the church cross. Out here, maybe 30 yards, I'm going to guess. About 30 yards. On this side of the church, there's a place that they identify as the barracks, which is simply a fenced-off area with a gate here, and that's where the main participants assemble all the time, and no one else dare go into that area during this period of time. Then they rope off an area like this, which is a plaza. They call it the plaza. It's just flat dirt, but it's space, and it's consecrated space for the things that are going to be happening here. Then they have the stations of the cross, which play a very important part here, with number one over here, and two, and then around the along the street on this side of the plaza, and over behind, and down this way, and then back in. That's the way of the cross, with 15 stations. And that is a very important part of the ceremony. They're just doing one way of the cross after another for each one for different purposes. Now, let's see. That's basically the physical setting. Now, they organize themselves into ceremonial societies so that individuals belong to, first society, the Pharisees, that's no mystery, I guess. The Pharisees are the name for the enemies of Christ. And this society is really in charge from Ash Wednesday until Saturday afternoon. They are the ones who are right out there in charge of everything that's going on, the powers of evil. The subgroups of the Pharisees are a Roman army. So there's a group of them with that paraphernalia and insignia, a Jewish army. And then there are the Pilatos, or the Pilates. There's not just one Pilate in this as enemy of Christ, but there is a team of them. And they are dressed in sort of royal gear, black, carrying a spear of authority and real dignified kind of costumes. And then there is that's everything except these mysterious characters. The Chapayekins. Now, if anybody's taking notes, that's Chapayekas. Chapayekas. These are masked dancers. And these are the really interesting characters of the whole ceremony. Many of them, well, a typical Chapayeka will be wearing maybe a top coat, which you should never even own in Guadalupe, in the desert. A top coat with a big belt around it, and from that belt will be dangling hundreds of little deer hoofs, dried deer hoofs. Someone whispered to me that most of them are from pigs. I mean, in their new world here, they can't get a hold of that many deer hooves. And they wear those around there, and they're just thick all the way around the waist on this belt. And then as a mask, a very large mask usually, some of them will be made of wood, carved of wood and painted to look like an animal. Some of them were like American Red Man with a hat on his head with arrows sticking through it. There's a lot of humor in these too. And they wear bells on their feet. Some of them look like a deer, some like a bear. There was a black man. So human features, animal features, some of them representing police, which are kind of enemies from their point of view. And these mysterious characters in these masks. And whenever they are around, and they're always around when there is praying going on and so forth, and they're there and they hear the name of Mary, the name of Jesus, and any of the prayers, and they immediately shake like that, and these things rattle like crazy. They're shaking off this power. There's a kind of fear of that power. And they're insolent and always mocking, but the name always shakes them up a little bit, and they have to shake off that possible power. So they're strange creatures, and they seem to come out of that forest world. And they're unpredictable. They do everything backwards. They are the clowns, in a certain sense, of the whole situation. And we learn to understand the seriousness and the sacredness by the very fact that they clown about it. And you feel some of the power of that going on. Well, these are all part of the Pharisees, that line of them. Now there's another set of society, or society, I guess I'll call it, made up of we'll call it the church society. There you have the maestros, who basically function as prayer leaders, and a Jesuit who happened to be hanging around there explained to me that they are ordained, even though Rome doesn't know it. And that they do sacraments, but they lead the prayer services, rather traditional Catholic prayer services for the liturgy of Holy Week. And while they are doing their thing, these enemies in the other society are doing their thing, sort of at the same time, and right by each other. The maestros are always accompanied by a few singers, the cantores. And then inside the church, there are sacristans, individuals responsible for whatever changes need to be made on that little altar. you got to, at certain points in this these ceremonies, the clothing of an image is changed to indicate a change of mood from sorrow to joy or something like that. So they treat the images and the changing of the colors and insignias. You have altar women, you have girl flag bearers who have a flag that represents a flower, and the flower represents the grace of Christ. There's a little story, I guess I've got myself into that now. Jesus, when his blood fell to the ground from the cross, the blood turned into flowers. Think of the forest world, the living plant life. The flowers are a blessing. And so the flowers from here on in the whole ceremonies, and anything green from the forest, a switchbow, a tree, anything, represents flowers, the grace of Christ, from the blood of Christ, which turned to flowers. So you have flag bearers who have these colorful flags, which are called flowers. And whenever they come across one of these enemies, and they do like that, they have to pull back because they still have that power in those flowers, the power of Christ's grace against evil. Then there are a few other people in this church society. So they're the sort of the straight. They're going to do it the right Christian way, the liturgy, and then in the midst of all these enemies. Then you have the Matachinis, another society which is allied with the church world, and they're kind of out of sight during this whole time. They don't dance. They're really a very colorful dancing society. For all sorts of religious occasions during all the rest of the year, but not during Lent. For the Pharisees are in charge during Lent. But the Matachinas then show up for a little bit, I think, in some of those villages on Palm Sunday night. And then they get out again real quick because it's a little bit of a celebration. But after the Gloria on Holy Saturday, when the resurrection is there, then the Matachinas show up with their violin dance instruments and dance beautifully in front of the church. The rest of the year, the Matachina Society is in charge of all the ceremonial life of the Yaqui community. Then there are the fiesta dancers. Whenever there is a great celebration, a fiesta, whether it be Palm Sunday entrance into Jerusalem, or finally after Saturday, or any other celebration during the year, they have the fiesta dancers are pascolas, several pascolas, which just means old man, the pascola dancers and deer dancers. Now, these characters just so obviously come from the forest world. This deer dancer is bare from the waist up. This belt of deer hooves, and they're really one deer hooves, and these rattles on his ankles, and he has this deer head, a stuffed deer head mounted on his head, antlers and all, and when he dances with that thing, his movements are all really deer. Talk about real presence. I mean, the holy, sacred deer spirit is in him, and he is it. And he and the Pascola dancers sort of work together in all of their celebrations. Now, all of these things, now, the Pharisees with their parts, and the church society, and the Matachinas, and the Pascola and deer dancers. All of these things have to be coordinated somehow in this total ceremonial experience. Okay, now how does the thing get rolling? On the first Friday night is when things start to happen. On Holy Ash Wednesday already, these armies appear in marching formation out in front of the church while the church society is inside praying. And then they come out and face this. But there is so far no Chapayeca. The first Chapayeca shows up in the first Friday night prayer service. And what happens is that he emerges out from under the altar.
During the prayer service, you start hearing a coyote bark. And all of a sudden, this masked thing comes out from under the altar and howls, looks around strangely, shakes around. What? The church society is supposed to just goes right on with their prayers, acting as though it isn't even happening. But here is this entrance of something from another world into the midst of this prayer service. That's the first appearance of Chapayeti. From now, and then on that Friday night, after the prayer service is in the church, they go out and do the way of the cross. Now, as they do the way of the cross, this whole ceremonial organization, in a certain sense, seems to be in charge. They are in straight lines, and according to rank, these are armies, and with their insignias, and they march in that sand and dirt. They stand down there in these clouds of dirt. Maybe 150 of them doing this at night, and under with another person looking down, the full moon, the big moon of that Holy Week. Definitely a participant, never quite explained how, but a participant in all of this. So they do that kind of dance, and the people of the village then, the ordinary faithful people, in between these lines, and are just walking along as sort of the innocent followers of Jesus, flanked by these powers of evil. But those powers of evil will keep everybody else in line, too. If there's any misbehavior by children or anybody else that gets out of line, they'll be rapped for it and brought into line. So that's the way it goes each Friday through Lent. And each Friday, more and more Chapayetis begin to appear. And they come out of the woodwork. Some of them will come out from under altars. Some of them will just show up like they've been sleeping for a year. From nowhere, in the middle of the village, walk around as though they're strangely lost. And by the end of all this, you have about 35 of these masked dancers in the processions by the end of Lent. And all of the dancing with different steps and a very simple musical guide that is just a beat that is a slow, regular beat on a drum, and a little pipe that plays a very simple little tune, and that's repeated every 30 seconds or so as they dance. But their step becomes more and more ominous, more and more threatening, until the last days of Holy Week, their way of dancing seems very aggressive. They're not moving fast, but the way they move their feet, the way they kick into that dirt, you feel the powers of evil assaulting the church in search for Christ. They're going to get him yet. One of the things that the Chapayetis do, they carry a wooden sword that's painted with all sorts of red and white and green colors, and they carry a dagger, also wooden, painted in the other hand. And as they march, they clap these two pieces of wood together in a steady beat. And then when they're stopping and not marching, they'll just kind of fool around and play jokes on each other. No speaking. They do not speak. They are not human beings in that sense. And they poke around in the sand with their sword tip like they were tracking animals. And they'll touch each other once and once, like they found the track of an animal. That's out of the old hunting world, but whose tracks are they looking for? They're looking for Jesus' tracks. They're tracking him down. All right, so that's the way it builds through Lent. On Palm Sunday night, eve of Palm Sunday, I managed to get out there at night, but I got there late and I couldn't see as well as I should have, and I had to preach the next morning, so I had to behave myself and make sure I didn't get in too much trouble out there. But they had a blessing of the palms already that night. And then they had a procession outside of the church to a ramada, just a shelter that was divided into two, that was over here beside the church. And they had a couple fires out in the open there in the plaza in front of that Ramada. But that Ramada is divided into two parts. And they processed, the church people processed into one part of it and knelt there and continued to do their prayers. Prayers on and on and on and on and on and into the night. These things last for hours and hours and hours. I mean, my Paul wouldn't have a chance there, because when we get into church, he said, "Is this a long church or a short church?" And on the other side of the Ramada, the Pascola and Deer Dancer are doing their thing. And it's almost as though these two totally ignore each other. These two worlds, the Deer Dancer, church society, going on at the same time. All night that festivity goes on. People of the village, what are they doing? They are gathered around, some of them pretty close to the church society, listening to those prayers, maybe joining where they can. Others are just observing. They're observing because this whole thing is being done in their behalf. And in a sense, they are a part of it, even though they aren't active participants in it. All right. Things really take off about Wednesday of Holy Week. When there is a tenebrae service, a service of candles, where one by one, as the prayers go on in certain segments, at the end of each segment, a candle is extinguished until finally all the candles are extinguished. In preparation for this tenebrae service on Wednesday night of Holy Week, they have these societies during the day, they work like heck, you know, putting posts in, building ramadas, and they have put a tree in the church. They have taken a whole lot of branches from somewhere and tied them together into a tree. That's really bringing the forest world into the church world, isn't it? And now they're ready. They get right at the opening of the church. They set up the candles for the tenebrae service. And then the simple little setup here, the maestro stands in front of the candles, and his helper is in front of him to extinguish candles once in a while. The singers are right behind him, about three of them, and on into the tenebrae service you go, with all the people just standing on the sides of the plaza, and these armies standing in line. Now, as this goes on, two by two, the corporals usher chapayecas into the church. They go in beside the dancers, come in this crazy gait, shake those rattles as they go, and got to keep that holy power off of them, the power of Jesus off of them as they go in. They go in, they search around through all that green stuff, all around the altar and every place, and they come out, they report silently with gestures to the corporal of the army. Couldn't find him. Couldn't find Jesus. They're in there looking for Jesus, tracking him down like hunters. They do that two by two, and you just feel this, you can feel the atmosphere build up as the search for Jesus by these enemies goes on. All right, so the chapayecas do that. Now when we come to the end of the tenebrae service, where the last candle is extinguished, then everybody goes toward the church, and the chapayecas lie down in the church, I'm told, because I couldn't see that well. And they flip their masks up, and the corporals whip them. We now have a ceremonial or ritual whipping. And the chapayecas get whipped, and then they move out in front, and all of these people take turns kneeling down and receiving three whips. After each stroke, you get the sign of the cross on your back. And then the people start coming in from their cars and from the concession stands and everywhere, and start coming into this. And fathers will do that with their children, and brothers will do that with each other, until everybody has participated in the ritual whipping in the darkness at the end of the tenebrae service. And the explanation for that is that, on the one hand, it is in memory of the scourging of Jesus, In another sense, it is understood to be a way in which they are actually bringing pardon to each other, forgiveness to each other, mutual forgiveness and reconciliation seems to be the overall intention of this. Meanwhile, you begin to hear an animal yell, an animal bark and howl from inside the church, and then all of a sudden all these chapayecas who are back in line out here in the plaza, they begin to make animal sounds in this darkness. So you've got a number of things mixing here all the time, some fairly straight Christian intentions, and then this interruption or the weaving into all of this of that forest world of their former hunter life. And it seems like the whole thing wouldn't work. It wouldn't be right without both of those elements in it. Holy Thursday now, at noon, the Chapayecas take a set of clappers and they run a relay race around the way of the cross there. And this silences all bells. No more bells until Jesus is risen again. In the afternoon of Thursday, they have a ceremony called the Pursuit of the Old Man. One of these Chapayecas was dressed like an old, real old man with decrepit kind of cane, so big mask making him look very strange, like an old man. He was now the old man of the ceremony, Viejito. And the others begin to torment him, and then they capture him out here by the church cross. And then with him, they start the procession around the way of the cross. And this pursuit of the old man is actually the pursuit of Jesus. But at the same time, it refers to, old man refers to the ancestors whose spirits live in the forest. But that's all been kind of brought in from their world and clapped on Jesus. And so you have this ceremony, the pursuit of the old man. They go around the way of the cross, and the old man eventually at every cross, he sits backwards with his back to the cross on the top of one of the other chapayecas. And that's how he does his prayers. Everything is backwards for the clowns and this kind of things. And yet there is something very serious about all that's going on. And then all the chapayecas lie down, and he takes a switch, a green switch. That's part of the flower world in the forest world. And he strokes each one of these chapayecas. And they get up and kind of drag him on a leash to the second cross. Until they get all the way around, and he is whipped. I mean, he is bushed. He is fatigued. He can hardly walk. He falls down. They drag him up again. He falls down again. And finally, they tie him up on a leash in front of the church. They've captured the old man. What is it? It's Jesus. But at the same time, it's something else out of their former world. He stays there for a few hours. Then they have another ceremony, which is called the capture of the Nazarene. They have an image of Jesus, kind of a like the Gethsemane thing, with him praying in Gethsemane. They build a bower out in the plaza, out of limbs and trees, limbs that are alive. And in that, they place on a table the image of the Nazarene. They post a church guard around it. They post, a Chapayeca guard around it, these enemies of Christ. And anyway, this is to represent Jesus in Gethsemane. And then they have a ceremonial assault on that bower, which lasts a long time until it ends up finally with them tearing up the whole bower, destroying it, capturing the image of the Nazarene. And now the enemies of Christ have captured him, and they take him back into the church, and they have a leash tied around, a little rope tied around the image. Two of them, in fact, and they have a chapayeca standing here holding the end of one of them, and one here the other. He is captured, and the church has been taken over by the enemies. So that's sort of the scene that they've built up to here by Thursday evening. Friday, you have at noon the Stations of the Cross. And as they go around the Stations of the Cross this time, Holy Friday, You have to remember that Jesus, in a certain sense, has already been captured. But he is yet to be killed. When we get around to the 11th station, which is called Calvary, while we are on our knees doing our prayers at that station, one of the Chapayecas comes up, if this is the cross and the station of the cross, comes up with his dagger and sword and taps against the cross here three times, over here three times, over here three times. And so the experience of the crucifixion of Jesus takes place in that way of the cross right there. After the way of the cross then is completed, everyone understands that Jesus has been not only captured, but crucified. A little later in the afternoon then, and I missed this, the Chapayecas go around the way of the cross again and pull up all the crosses. But they also cover all the crosses then with green boughs, with limbs, cottonwood boughs. And so they're all covered. Okay. Then late that afternoon, I think it was about 6 o'clock, we went out in search of a casket for Jesus. And we marched in ceremony, all these people leading the march, village people in the middle. And we went over to one of these junky backyards of where some of the Yaquis live. And there was a beautiful Easter egg type thing about 6 or 7 feet tall and 8 or 9 feet long in its oblong state with a chicken sitting on top. And this in paper mache, a beautiful thing. And this was picked up after a whole bunch of prayers there. It was picked up and in procession this was carried back into the church. So this was to be the burial casket of Jesus. Now, it is that night then, at midnight, when we do three rounds of the stations of the cross. And we stop only, but remember the crosses aren't there. They're on the ground, flat and covered. What happens is that the maestro comes to each place, says some prayers, and somebody pokes a stick around through those boughs. And then we move on to the next one. We do not kneel to do the prayers on this round. It's done rather quickly. And you go to all the stations, and what's happening is that it seems like we're looking for him somewhere in this. And the truth of the matter is that the whole ceremony, everybody seems to understand this, the rumor is out that he is alive again, that he has risen. But we don't know for sure. And so in this round, we're looking back into the church, prayers, back out for another round of looking. And then comes the third round, and that's when they wake up their loudspeakers for the first time and say, if you don't know what's going on at this point, please stay out of the procession. It could be dangerous. On the third round, about halfway around, somebody announces, he is risen. And then everybody starts running all over the place, and they're just tearing around this way of the cross, running, sometimes running into each other, because it is the celebration of the disciples that he is risen. But it's still a kind of an inside secret. Belongs to the disciples. It's not for the world yet. I mean, it's obvious to everybody that's there. But that is the celebration already about 1 o'clock in the morning after Good Friday. All right, and then we come into Saturday. And Saturday, the Chapayecas have a big procession carrying an effigy of Judas, who is their patron saint at this point. Carrying an effigy of Judas. They fooled around with him before, celebrating as though they were victors. But this time, this procession with the effigy of Judas comes out into the middle of the plaza, and he is stood up, fastened upon a pole in the midst of a pyre. And he is going to be burned when it's all done. So this colorful effigy stands there, looking almost in the posture of the cross. And when we came in, we saw that people were putting ribbons on his arms. And I asked somebody who finally answered me in a kind of gruff way, they are making promises to Jesus. And these promises will be burned up with the ribbons in the fire. So that Judas effigy stands there. Meanwhile, the marching starts. And the marching is very aggressive now toward the church. And church people and deer dancers and pascolas are gathered up in front of the church, and they have confetti and flower petals all over the place in buckets. And now they have three assaults against the church, as though these enemies of Christ for one more time are going to try to conquer. And this time, as they get close to the church, those church people pelt them with flowers and confetti. Remember what that is. That's grace. That's the blood of Christ. That is the victory. And they run back. They take formation again. And they come again. Until the third time, when they have been repelled by the flowers, then you have the glory breaks out. And this is the beginning of the public celebration of Jesus resurrected, the final defeat of the armies of the Pharisees. Christ is risen. And then the Chapayecas place, let's see, I got some time things there. They place, I believe, right away, Marlene, you remember this, they took their masks off then and then went from there into the church. Yeah. All right. They go out to the Judas pyre, which is now lighted and burning like crazy out there. And hundreds and hundreds of people around. And they throw these magnificent masks, which you have come over the weeks to love. And they had such a personality about it. Some of them made of skins and beautiful animal skins. And so they throw them into the pyre with Judas. All of them are contaminated with the forces of evil. And they cover their heads. These Chapayecas, and along with everybody else of the Pharisees, they run inside the church, accompanied by some adult person who is called a sponsor, and who has sort of been in charge of the welfare of their soul while they have been impersonating evil all this time. And they run in for a rededication to Christ. And when they come out of there, I mean, they are bushed. They have really been through it after this week. They haven't been able to go home. They've been sleeping in those barracks. They've been dancing in this dusty heat and covered with these garments and this hot mask. And they come out of there. You know they have been doing a ceremonial work. And that's the rededication. And all of this then goes up in flames. Now the Pascola dancers and deer dancers begin an all-night fiesta. And the church people pray all night. And the Matachina dancers dance all night. And maybe you can tell, I found it a powerful Christian religious experience. And when I compare that to adding about two extra one-hour services to my Holy Week schedule, I think maybe we are really pipers when it comes to what we're willing to invest in order to receive that transforming power of the Holy Week and Easter blessing. Didn't save you very much time to ask questions, but we got started 5 minutes late. And there's so much more I wish I could have told you about that. But what's on your mind at that point?
Who was the priest?
Excuse me, who was the priest? That's a very sticky situation because the Roman Catholic Church has a church right beside this, right beside it on the plaza, and it is staffed with a regular parish priest by the diocese. But these folks have a Jesuit fella who is sort of freelance. He's an attorney, and he's a social worker, and he gives them some guidance. He's a Matachina dancer, but they have their maestros that do the leading. Now, these Yaquis go to both churches. They're part of both. But this ceremony is just kind of ignored by officialdom over here, by the official Catholic Church, because it's not quite what the Jesuits had in mind. I guess that answer. Who's the priest? The maestro.
Is this man a Yaqui?
Yes. Oh, yes. has received ordination through the Yaqui line that started when the Jesuits got kicked out of Mexico. After 150 years of working with the Yaquis in Mexico, the Jesuits got run out by the government. And they were not replaced. And so the next 150 years in Mexico, the Yaquis were doing their own thing and putting this, kind of weaving these two worlds together. And they had their maestros as priests, yes.
And the image of the Nazarene, is that a picture or is that...
No, it's a plaster Paris image, probably I think it was about that tall, looked like Jesus praying in the Gethsemane, kind of a typical one. It's as gaudy as all Spanish saint art of saints, you know. It's real kind of funny looking stuff. If you like gaudiness on the altars, it's all there. But boy, I mean, it was real. You know, the one word I want Lutherans to, I can say to Lutherans, I think, and they'll understand what I mean, is real presence. This is not a passion play in the sense that we're just trying to depict something. It is here, present, in, with, and under all this activity is the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ happening now as a part of our ceremonial work. That's the feeling you have. And that's what we talk about in the Holy Eucharist, and you really have that feeling in this ceremonial activity. Other questions? Yes.
What's the significance of deer dance?
He comes from that world of the forest. The deer dancer, and you didn't hear me talk about forest world and church world? Yeah. He represents, I would say, the species deer. And he's kind of a divine representation. I call him in history of religions, master of animals. A divine being who sort of represents the essence of deerness. And they have a lot of dances done between Pascolas and deer dancers. And sometimes the Pascolas are the hunters, and they finally conquer the deer and bring him back to the village. So you have some of that. No, on Palm Sunday, they had invited this Jesuit priest to celebrate the Eucharist at 6 a.m. They wanted to, you know, they like to keep the regular things in, but the regular things aren't the prime focus right now.
But it's all the same thing that the normal Catholic Church next door is doing.
Yeah, they run their own things over there.
Does anyone go there?
A few, the Mexicans in the village go there, quite a few of them, and some of the others. But it's real low-key, I'll tell you. I can tell you one more thing that kind of blows your mind, and that is this whole plaza in front of the regular church is covered on starting Good Friday afternoon with a carnival. And right beside the plaza where all this stuff is going on, you have Ferris wheels and all this stuff. And that's simply to help pick up the expenses of all this. And also, it's an interesting expression that the seriousness of ceremonial work and worship does not have to exclude the ordinary recreational fun and stuff that goes on. And they really keep those things close together. But that's right in front of the Catholic Church, while right beside it all this ceremonial activity is going on. It's really a strange experience, but you can still feel the spiritual force of it going all the way. Yes.
Are all the dancers and the participants men?
All are men, except the women who participate in the church societies. All the dancing groups are men. Mm-hmm. No, there are no Yaquis up in there. I don't think there are any there. No, I think Tucson and Guadalupe are South Phoenix. Uh-huh. That's the only places I know. I need to excuse you. Some of you'd like to pursue it a few minutes now. Tomorrow I want to talk about the whole business of the encounter of Christianity with non-Christian religions and what shall we make of it. What attitudes are appropriate about it? Things of that sort.